Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. Overlapping letters separate to form XYZ films. Netflix presents a Netflix original film. An XYZ Films production. In association with Uncorked Productions. A Chris Sparling film. White text fades into view, reading, "Mercy." The word grows blurry and disappears. A view rushing over a meadow of goldenrod leads to an empty two-lane road under an ashen sky. James Wolk, Caitlin Fitzgerald, Tom Lipinski, Dan Ziske, Michael Goddard, Michael Donovan, Dion Graham, Constance Barron. A silver SUV drives down the deserted country road past bare gray trees. Casting by Jessica Daniels, CSA. Director of Photography, Luca Del Pupo. Edited by Seth Anderson, Philip Kimsey. Music by Philip Mossman. Executive producers Ian Brick, Matthew Levin. Executive producer Nick Spicer. A man in a tweed blazer steps out of the SUV beside a red farmhouse. Produced by Andrew D. Corkin, Robin K. Bennett, Kyle Frank. Written and directed by Chris Sparling. The man carries a black leather doctor's bag up to the front door. He stares through the glass, his mouth tight above his salt and pepper beard. A gray-haired man with a lined face comes to the door.
Who are you?
Mr. Mitchell?
Yeah. What do you want?
We spoke on the phone several times. I'm Dr. Turner.
Mr. Mitchell nods.
Yeah. Well, nothing's changed.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
Mitchell squints at the doctor.
That's it, then.
Doesn't have to be this way.
Listen, you have no right to get involved. My wife is dying and...
Your wife is suffering.
Dr. Turner glares at him.
It's within your power to stop that.
The doctor holds up his black leather bag.
You're not coming in.
Do it yourself, then. Any of you.
I told you before.
I've included instructions on how to operate.
We're not interested.
What about the rest of your family?
They're not either.
We're talking about your wife here, Mr. Mitchell. How can you not be interested? You have a safe and effective option available.
Mitchell licks his lips.
Use it.
The old man snatches the doctor's bag from him.
Get off my property.
Dr. Turner takes a step back as Mitchell closes the door on him. Now, a red-headed old woman mounts letters on a church sign to form a saying. She spells out, "Your gold and silver will be worthless on the day of wrath." A vintage brown muscle car speeds past the small white church as the woman works out front. A meadow of goldenrod sways in the breeze as the car flies past. Inside the car, a thin man with a crew cut grips the wheel with his left hand. He pulls out his cell phone and puts it to his ear.
Hello. Yeah, what? I know. You get your money.
At a crossroads, he comes to a standstill next to a stop sign. Bare tree limbs reflect in the half-open passenger window across from him.
I need a week.
Dr. Turner pulls up to the same intersection in his silver SUV and stops at the stop sign to the brown car's left. The man in the muscle car cranks up his radio and turns left, swinging around the SUV to take the road the doctor just came from. Inside the farmhouse, Mr. Mitchell stands in a bedroom staring to the side. He turns to a framed painting of a stylized cross, its vertical and horizontal lines connected with angles, forming a diamond shape. He pulls the art off the wall, then reaches down to get a claw hammer and use it to lever the nail out of the wall. He drops the hammer and nail down in a blue toolbox on the floor. The brown muscle car pulls up the driveway. Mitchell watches it arrive from the bedroom window, then picks up a box containing the cross painting. The crew cut man in the car pulls up behind a parked pickup truck, then reaches over and takes something small and white from the glove compartment. Now he carries a beat-up tan bag around the nose of the car and trudges over to the tree-lined front of the house. He stops and stares up at the building, then gazes down toward the leaf-covered ground at his feet. To his left, behind some overgrown plants, he notices a tree stump with an axe stuck in it. He saunters slowly over toward the axe and chopping stump. As the sun sets, he chops wood. He places another log on the stump, splits it, then is distracted by headlights as a pickup truck pulls into the driveway behind his car. He glares at the distant vehicle as two men climb out of it, then he spits and goes back to chopping wood. Inside the house, the two young men from the pickup step into a bedroom doorway. The bearded one in front knocks on the door jamb as his round-faced companion stands just behind him. Mitchell looks over at them from where he sits by the bed next to an IV drip and medical monitors. All three men look toward the bed.
Here. I'll give you some time alone with your mother.
The older man rises and walks past his two sons and out the bedroom door. The gray-haired woman lying on the bed is motionless as her sons gaze over at her. Later in the kitchen, Mitchell peels an apple with a large folding pocket knife while his bearded son sits across from him, tapping a metal cigarette lighter on the table. The older man turns his craggy face toward his son, who stares back at him. Mitchell returns to peeling his apple. Standing nearby, the round-faced son spits gum into some paper and turns to tug open a cabinet under the kitchen sink. He pulls out the garbage can, drops the gum in, then removes the black leather doctor's bag from where it was wedged in the trash. He turns back toward his father and squints at the older man, then places the bag in the center of the kitchen table between his dad and his brother.
What's that doing there, Pop?
The doctor came by earlier.
The one who's been calling?
Yep.
Why'd he give it to you, Pop?
Said we could do it ourselves. Any one of us.
What about Brad and Travis?
What about them? They want their cut, too.
You really want to have that conversation now?
No. Yeah. Yeah, I do, actually.
Use your fucking head, Ronnie, will you?
Hey, I am using my fucking head.
No.
What's the matter with
no.
you?
No. You're not.
Mitchell grabs the bag from the table and jams it back in the kitchen trash container under the sink. He sits back down at the table and glares across at Ronnie, the wrinkles in his forehead deepening.
Your mother got a lot of money when Travis and Brad's father died. A lot.
Yeah, Pop, we know. That's why we're here.
Shut up.
Shut up. Now, that money has been locked up in a separate account for years. And I made it so that when she passes, that money goes to me. That means that when my time comes, by law, that money will all go to you too.
He looks at his two sons, then Ronnie squirms in his chair.
I don't know what you're... What are you talking about, Pop? When your time comes...
Yeah, that's right. Not to that degenerate outside, not to his asshole brother. But if you keep running your mouth about inheritances and whatever else, they might just change their minds about all this. And if that's what ends up happening, well, I hope you know a good lawyer.
Both boys stare unblinking at their father. Now in the garage, the round-faced son pulls a tarp off a motorcycle.
He still runs?
Don't know.
Ronnie covers it back up, then his brother hands him a metal box which he uses to weigh down the edge of the tarp.
I'd take it with me if I had time to ride it, but busy working all the goddamn time.
Maybe you should sell it.
Hopefully after all this I won't have to. Now,
well, don't.
Can you settle?
I'm settled. What do you...
Stop fiddling with everything in this book.
The man with a crew cut walks into the open-air garage carrying an armload of the firewood he's been chopping.
Hey.
Hey.
He doesn't turn as he stacks the wood one cord at a time.
When'd you get out?
A couple weeks ago.
What was it this time, B&E?
Assault.
You okay?
I don't know.
TJ, how are you?
What are you doing for work?
Things.
Oh, yeah? What kind of things?
What do you care, Ronnie?
Well, me and TJ just talked to Dad.
Your dad, not mine.
Whatever. He's holding all the cards, you know. Especially yours.
Ronnie.
No, he should hear this.
Ronnie steps closer.
He's cutting you out. You and Brad.
What are you doing, Ronnie?
Shut up.
He throws TJ a look.
Why are you telling me this, Ronnie?
Because you're my brother.
Ronnie nods slightly.
So, yeah. Those things you're doing. Hopefully they pay good.
The ex-con smirks at the other two and saunters away. On a dark country road, headlights gleam in the distance as a car crests a hill. The lamps reflect off the slick road surface in front of the vehicle and the guardrails to one side as it approaches. It comes closer, passing alongside shadowy trees and looming telephone poles. The car speeds past the church where the sign is lit up, reading, "Your gold and silver will be worthless on the day of wrath," Proverbs 11:4. Inside, a thick-haired man with a cleft chin steers the car down the dark roads, and the blonde woman in the passenger seat beside him glances down at her cell phone.
You can take that.
It's just work.
That part I don't miss.
She turns her eyes toward him, then away.
I'm sorry to ask this, but we're gonna be okay after this, right?
He glances at her, then nods. They pull up to the intersection and come to a standstill at the stop sign. There are no other cars on the road, but the man at the wheel hesitates for a moment. He looks out into the darkness there at the crossroads, then glances toward the woman and makes the left turn. They pull up the driveway, their headlights shining between the muscle car and the pickup truck as they park behind the other vehicles. The man and woman in the car sit staring at the house before them. Now they walk up toward the red clapboard building as warm light glows from the windows. The couple steps inside the front door into the foyer. In the next room, TJ stands talking on the phone while his brother squats by a wood stove feeding the flames. Ronnie glances away from the fire and up at the couple as they walk in the room.
This is Melissa.
Ronnie slams the stove closed and stands up, his hands in his pockets.
Hey. These are my brothers, TJ, Ronnie.
Half-brothers.
Brad's told me a lot about both of you.
Melissa smiles at the two men.
He shouldn't have told you anything.
She bites her lips and looks down at the floor. Then Mitchell walks in from the other room.
Who's this?
Brad glares at him.
She's a friend.
Do you understand what's going on here?
I'm just here to help Brad through this.
The old man sways from one foot to another.
This is none of your business.
She gazes at him, her eyes wide.
Where's Travis?
Brad blinks. In the bedroom, the old woman sleeps on her hospital bed in the yellow glow spilling out from under the shades of two ceramic lamps on bedside tables beside her. Travis watches her from the foot of the bed, his head tilted downward. He reaches into the front right pocket of his jeans, then stops and turns toward the door behind him to listen. He slides his hand back out of his pocket, empty, then steps from the room, leaving his mother alone. In the hallway, Travis carefully closes the bedroom door, then looks down to see his brother Brad trudging up the stairs toward him. Brad steps up to Travis and the two siblings gaze at each other, then embrace. They separate and Travis heads down the stairs while Brad faces the closed door to the bedroom. He gazes up toward the ceiling, then drops his head down. Brad shifts his weight from one foot to the other, then reaches for the doorknob. He steps slowly into the room, passing a series of framed family photos, resting on top of a narrow bookcase just inside the door. He crosses by the foot of the hospital bed and circles around to the far side of it, then looks down at his mother, his brow furrowed. Brad steps closer and takes the old woman's hand. She stirs, looking up at her son through heavy lids. Melissa steps in through the open door and walks to the foot of the bed. The older woman tilts her head forward to look down toward the younger one. Brad turns to see his girlfriend.
This is Melissa.
Melissa grins slightly as the woman in the bed squints at her, then drops her head back to the pillow. Brad turns his head and gives a sideways glance toward his mom. Later, Melissa and the men sit around a fire pit outside.
I found this up in the attic last week. It's your mother's old diary. But before we get to that, let's get something else out of the way. Because I know you all saw the bag. You all know what's in it, and you all know what it will do.
Mitchell purses his lips tightly.
But being able to do it ourselves doesn't change a goddamn thing, and that's that.
He settles into a chair and opens the leather-bound diary to a wrinkled, faded page.
June 10th, 1982. I'm trying to move on day by day. The church has been so supportive, but I'm still struggling. I know it's horrible to say, but Bradley's death was like a gift. I certainly prayed for an accident like that enough times. And now, as I'm struggling to move on, I'm being told that I have to decide what to do with his remains.
He turns the page and looks up briefly.
Whenever my time comes, and that decision has to be made for me, I can only hope it's made by someone who cares about me, and not by someone who's glad I'm dead. So, we should discuss her arrangements for once this is over.
Well, I'm not ready to think that far ahead yet.
Ronnie turns to his half-brother.
The hell does that mean?
Melissa glances at Brad.
Okay, I don't know what you two are trying to pull. But whatever it is, it ain't gonna work.
Trying to pull anything, Ronnie.
Maybe he just cares about his mother.
Oh, maybe you should shut up and mind your fucking business.
How about you,
how about you try that for a fucking second?
Brad dives for him.
Stop! All right, back up.
The others hold them apart.
This ain't gonna end good for you.
He looks at Travis.
You either.
He turns to Melissa.
And you, whatever you think's going on here, you're wrong.
Ronnie storms back to the house, his brother close behind. Later in the attic, Travis gazes at a framed jigsaw puzzle featuring a painting of Michael the Archangel. There is one missing piece near the top right corner of the completed puzzle. Brad walks up behind him, his hands in his pockets, as he nears the dangling bare bulb that illuminates the cluttered room.
What are you doing?
Nothing, man, just looking around.
Brad motions to the framed puzzle.
I remember that.
Mom and her religion, hocus pocus bullshit.
Brad turns away from his brother.
She always thought I stole the missing piece.
Travis stares at the jigsaw puzzle in his hands.
She never said it, but I don't know. She thought it.
Man, you don't know that.
Yeah, well, I wasn't you.
Brad blinks.
You made your own choices, Travis.
Travis turns to him.
Yeah, I know I did, Brad. I still do. I accept who I am.
What, and I don't?
You say you're not ready to think that far ahead yet?
That's fine. I mean, it's bullshit, but it's fine. But don't pretend that actually makes you any better than the rest of us in all this. It doesn't. It makes you worse.
Travis walks away. Outside, all is still in the darkness beyond the few lights still streaming from the red farmhouse. Within, Mitchell shuts a light off as Melissa and Brad get ready for bed.
I'm gonna set the alarm for 7:15.
Whatever you want.
He scrolls through the alarm settings on his phone and sets it for 7:15. Brad sets his phone down and looks around the small wood-paneled bedroom from his seat on the edge of a twin bed. Melissa is lying under the covers of the other twin bed, her back to him.
I'm sorry about all that stuff earlier by the fire.
She rolls over to face him and leans on her elbow. Outside their room, Mitchell walks by, stopping to listen.
There's something I need to ask you.
In the room, Melissa pulls the covers off and sits on the edge of her bed, facing Brad.
What did Ronnie mean when he said that I don't know what's really going on?
Mitchell steps closer to their bedroom door.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't do this.
So tell me.
Her pain. My mother's pain.
There's a way to make it go away.
Mitchell's lips tighten.
Is that what's in the black bag?
The old man raises his head as he eavesdrops.
Then why wouldn't you?
Brad looks downward and she tilts her head.
It's not that simple.
Outside their door, Mitchell drops his head. Brad looks into his girlfriend's eyes, nods, then flashes a small grin.
Good night.
He switches off the light as beyond the door, his stepfather turns away. Up in the master bedroom, the mother lies still as her husband switches off the light beside her bed, plunging the room into darkness. He pulls a lap blanket from the foot of her bed and rolls it up in his arms, then steps away. Downstairs in the living room, Ronnie plays with his lighter as he and TJ drink beer.
We should replace the truck, too. Thing's a piece of shit.
It's not the truck, it's the economy.
TJ looks at pictures from a shoebox full of photos. Ronnie sets his lighter down on the TV cabinet and walks toward his brother.
Okay, how'd it go at the bank?
Not good.
Ronnie leans in.
Okay, what about the other place, the credit union?
Well, no, that's not going to happen there either. Nobody's giving out any loans.
The bearded brother turns away.
What we gotta do that.
Ronnie takes a swig of beer from his bottle. TJ pulls off a small photo that was stuck to the back of another.
Oh, man.
What?
It's Mom's wedding photo. From her church.
Ronnie sits down next to his brother on the couch, and they both look at the photo.
I've never seen Brad Sr. before.
Me neither.
Did you know anything about him?
Ronnie stares down at the photo in his hands, his brow knitted.
Only that he used to beat the shit out of Mom.
He hands the photo back to TJ and rises.
Explains why Mom wanted him gone.
Explains a lot of things.
The back of the photo is stamped with the same stylized cross that was hanging in the bedroom.
We gotta do what we gotta do, TJ.
TJ lifts his head. Outside in the darkness, the moon glows diffusely through bare tree branches. The big house is dark and quiet as leaves rustle in the slight breeze of the night air. Inside, a shadowy silver pendulum swings within a grandfather clock. The mother sleeps in her hospital bed, her head tilted to one side. Travis sleeps on his side, the tattoos on his shoulder and ribcage facing upward. In another room, a bed is unmade and empty. Brad sleeps on his back, his clean-shaven features relaxed. Brad twitches and awakens at the sounds, his eye darting. He leans forward and rises slowly from the bed. In the living room, the television is on, static filling its screen. Brad steps into the room, his arms swinging, and turns toward the TV set. He leans down and switches the TV off. He straightens up to gaze over toward the sheer curtains covering the bay windows of the living room. He turns and steps slowly into the dining room. The door to the outside is open. Brad looks around him, then walks to the open door. He gazes outside, then pushes the door shut, peering into the darkness outside through the glass of the door as he closes it. Now in Travis's room.
Travis.
What?
Travis, wake up.
What?
I need you to put your shoes on.
What's wrong?
I don't know, maybe nothing. Just put your shoes on.
The exterior lights on the front porch and side door of the house burn brightly in the night, as do the lights now glowing through the bay windows of the living room. Inside the living room, Brad holds a sheer curtain aside as he peeks out of the bay windows.
What's going on?
Shh. So I'm not sure. I woke up, right? I came down here, the TV was on.
That's why you woke me up?
No. I think someone was in the house. Side door was wide open.
Travis walks toward the side door, stops in front of a window, and pushes the curtain aside to look outside. Behind him, Brad leans down to reach for something on the table next to him.
Travis.
Brad holds up the house phone, which is missing its cord. The lights go out. Travis goes back to the window to look outside.
Weather didn't do that.
How do you know?
Barn lights on.
The two brothers lock eyes, then look around in the darkness.
Listen. You go check, see where Ronnie and TJ are. I'll go look at the breaker.
They split up, Brad running to the kitchen to pull open the cabinet under the sink and grab a flashlight. The trash can is empty. Outside, Travis snags a flashlight from the floor of his muscle car and starts back, then turns to shine the light toward the car. All the tires are slashed. He spins his light to the house. It illuminates the axe wedged into the chopping stump. Now in the cluttered basement, Brad steps gingerly down the wooden staircase, shining his flashlight ahead of him. The beam hits a birdcage laced with cobwebs and dusty boxes. He steps off the bottom tread of the stairs and past a neat row of glass jars sitting at the end of a beat-up counter. A maze of silver air ducts crisscross the ceiling above his head. Leading with the flashlight, he walks deeper into the basement, his mouth slack as his eyes scan the area. Just to his right is a narrow wooden door. Upstairs in their bedroom, Melissa stirs. She rolls over in the darkness. In the basement, Brad reaches for the wooden door, pulling it open. The open breaker box is on the far wall of the small room beyond the door. He spins.
Jesus.
It's Travis.
The tires are slashed. Where are Ronnie and TJ?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't fucking know. They were in their beds.
You think that they slashed the tires?
Travis shines his light, the axe gripped in his other hand.
This is crazy.
Now Melissa fumbles for Brad's phone on the bedside table. In the living room, Melissa uses the dim light of the cell to guide her way. She steps forward in bare feet, her eyes wide. Unseen behind her, a dark figure silhouetted against a window slips off to the side. Travis goes to the breaker box and flips the circuit breaker switch. The brothers run up the basement stairs. Brad sees a bloody, broken drinking glass on the floor. He dashes outside. Travis checks his mom's room, seeing the open doctor's bed. Outside, Brad tears toward the edge of the yard, then stops and peers at the dark woods.
Melissa!
He shines his light across the wall of trees before him. Travis leans his axe against the hospital bed and reaches into the medical bag to pull out a red plastic container. He lifts a box-like metal device from the bag and reaches beyond it to lift up an instruction pamphlet. Travis stares at the pamphlet, looks toward his mother, then rushes out, leaving the axe behind. Brad heads away from the glow of the house and into the woods. He freezes, panning his light across the gray tree trunks ahead of him. He takes a step, then sways back and forth. A shadow brushes over Brad and he spins to his left, but there's no one there.
Who's there?
He shines his light across a fallen tree, its bare branches reaching to the side. Travis dashes outside.
Brad!
Brad turns toward his brother's voice as someone darts up behind him in the darkness. It's Melissa.
Help me! Help me! Help me!
What happened? Talk to me. What happened?
Travis stops Melissa as Brad turns to the woods. Two masked figures stare at him from between tree trunks.
Ronnie?
The hooded men stand motionless, then run full speed toward Brad. Melissa and the brothers sprint to the house. Travis stumbles, but Brad helps him up. They dive in the side door, slam it shut, and slide a table in front of it. Brad and Travis stack more furniture on the barricade. They lift up the dining room table and jam it sideways against the window. The brothers tear through the house and rush up the staircase. They burst into their mother's room.
Are you okay?
Okay.
What's doing here? What happened?
DJ was in the woods.
Travis wedges a chair against the doorknob as Brad looks at Melissa's bloody foot.
Get the bureau. Come on.
The men slide a bureau over to the door, bracing it with their bodies.
They're coming. Hold on!
The door starts to buckle. From her bed, the dying mother grips Melissa's hand.
She's here! You're scaring her!
Melissa stares toward the now motionless door, still gripping the old woman's hand. The two brothers look at each other from across the bureau. Travis holds up his index finger to Brad. He lowers himself down next to the door and presses his cheek to the floor, looking out under the crack. Brad stares at his brother from behind the bureau as Melissa leans forward to watch Travis from her place beside the hospital bed.
They're gone.
Travis falls back from the door. He grabs his flashlight and shines it under the crack. A hand appears below the door, then the edge of a masked face. One piercing blue eye peers from an eye hole in the pale knitted ski mask. The face and hand withdraw. Travis drops his head back to the floor behind him and switches off the flashlight. He rises to his feet as Brad wraps up Melissa's foot with bandages.
Here you go.
What is happening?
I don't know. We should have just let them do it.
Brad's head jerks up.
Do what? Hey,
who's them?
Did you make enemies in there, Travis? Is that who this is?
No, that's not who it is.
Would they do that? Your family? Would they?
They're not our family.
Hey, look at me. I'm asking you a question. Who is it?
Don't.
What aren't you telling me?
Don't touch
it. Stop it!
The lights go out again. All three of them turn toward the woman lying in the hospital bed. The old woman is motionless in the darkness, her eyes closed. The others stare at the black screen of the monitor sitting on her bedside table. It comes to life, reading, charge full, battery remaining 6 hours. Travis walks away from the bed. Outside on the lawn, someone squirts lighter fluid on the grass, then flicks Ronnie's lighter on. In the dark bedroom, Brad checks the door barricade as Travis stands near a window. Melissa turns toward another window as flickering orange light streams in from outside through the lace curtains. She pushes the curtains aside and looks out, her eyes reflecting the orange glow. The two men join her at the window.
What the fuck?
Written in fire in large letters across the lawn is the word Mercy. Two masked men stand behind the flames.
What do they want?
They want us to get with this.
Travis hands Brad the blue instruction pamphlet, which has the word Clavexian printed on the front cover. Brad looks over at his mother.
They can't get in this room.
Melissa's eyes widen as she turns and gazes back down toward the flames on the yard below. Brad tosses the pamphlet on the bed next to the medical bag. Travis reaches into the bag and starts pulling items out.
Stop. Travis, stop.
Fine. If you don't want to do this, then why don't we just pull the plug?
No.
You're a fucking hypocrite. She's suffering, Brad.
I'll do it.
You don't even know what you'd be doing.
No, you cannot get involved in this.
I'm already involved.
What is she talking about? How is she involved?
Is this about the money? This isn't about money.
What are you two angling at?
We're not angling at anything.
He's cutting us out, Brad.
Who?
George.
How do you know that?
Not about the money, huh?
How do you know that?
Ronnie told me.
Well, he's playing you.
Maybe.
And maybe we can't fix that, but we can fix this.
Listen to him.
But if we do this, what, you think that they're just gonna let us go?
Yes, they're offering mercy.
We can't just go pump the guy or what into her.
It's experimental. It's not fucking heroin.
Who are we, huh? We're not doctors.
We're her sons.
Brad gazes at his brother, his chin raised.
It'll work.
The two men lock eyes, then Brad looks down toward their mother.
I know it will. And when it does, then what happens?
What, to her?
Brad takes his hand off the leather bag.
To us.
They search each other's faces, then Travis moves away from his brother, dropping the doctor's bag on a small table between two windows. On the yard below, the two masked men stare up toward the bedroom window, the only opening in their grayish-blue masks, the eye holes. Travis turns from the window, reaches down to the blue toolbox, and pulls out a heavy pipe fitter's wrench.
Hey, what are you doing?
I'm gonna go for help.
No, you're not.
What else are we gonna do?
Well, we'll try the police.
On what?
My cell phone.
It's
on the bureau. I can go get it.
No, no.
My room's closer.
Brad glances toward the door.
No. No, 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 no. It's too dangerous.
We're gonna get in this room eventually.
The brothers glare at each other.
Fuck.
It's okay.
No, it's not.
I have to try.
Fuck.
I have to try.
Brad shakes his head resignedly, then claps his hands affectionately to both sides of his brother's neck. The hallway beyond the bedroom door is dark and still as Travis eases the door open, his flashlight angled downward. He steps into the hall, the beam of his light glancing off rows of framed artwork lining the walls. Travis shuts the door behind him, the whites of his eyes glistening in the shadows. He reaches into the front right pocket of his jeans and pulls out the white object from his glove compartment.
Damn it.
He returns the small gift box to his pocket and raises up the wrench. Travis steps forward, panning his light from side to side as he walks. He swings open the door to his bedroom and shines his light on a messy desk with no cell phone in sight.
Shit.
Now he heads downstairs, his light reflecting off the glass and dark wood of the closed front door and its recessed panels. He turns and starts off across the downstairs hallway, his lips parted slightly as he passes an unlit wall sconce. The door to Brad and Melissa's room is open. The phone charger cable sits on a bedside table, but there's no cell phone. Travis spins and continues down the hallway, his flashlight close to his face. Outside, a masked figure strolls across the grass as behind him, Travis steals over to hide next to a tree. Travis turns and looks at the barn, its red doors lit up from above by a single exterior fixture. As the masked figure continues away, Travis works his way to the open-air garage. He pulls the cover from the motorcycle, knocking the metal box down, sitting on the edge of the tarp. Travis reaches down to pick up what was inside the box. It's a revolver. He flips open the cylinder to check for bullets, then slides the loaded pistol into the back of his jeans and reaches for the bike's handlebars. Back in the bedroom, Brad watches his mother sleep, her lined face tight.
There's Travis.
He joins Melissa at the window. A masked man stands by the still-burning letters as Travis wheels the motorcycle slowly toward him. Brad and Melissa watch this from above.
Hey, where's the other guy?
Travis continues pushing the motorcycle across the lawn. Brad leans closer to the glass.
What's that right there?
What?
There.
Where?
A masked man is right outside their window. He kicks it in. Brad struggles with the man, and Melissa is thrown to the ground. The intruder slams Brad to the floor and shoves the axe handle down toward him. Brad slams the side of the axe into his head. Brad hefts the axe and the man flees back out the window. On the lawn below, the motorcycle lies on its side and two masked men descend on Travis while he crawls to the gun. Upstairs, Brad and Melissa slide a dresser in front of the broken window. Travis gets on top of one of the men, straddling him as they struggle. Behind them, the other man points the gun at Travis's back. Travis drops to the ground next to the little white box, which has fallen open to reveal his mother's missing puzzle piece nestled inside. All goes black. Heavy, dark clouds drift across the overcast sky behind the simple gray church steeple crowning the small white church. On the ground below, the old red-haired woman wheels her wagon full of letters around to the sign out front as the leaves swirl about the front steps of the church. Inside the building, Dr. Turner sits in one of the rear pews of the deserted church, wearing his tweed blazer. Mottled light streams in through the yellow, blue, and pink geometric shapes of three stained glass windows filling the wall to his left. He looks up toward the ceiling, then rises from the wooden pew and strides away, leaving the building empty behind him. Now the doctor pulls his silver SUV up to the stop sign at the crossroads. Travis's brown muscle car stopped at the road to his right. Travis cranks up his radio and turns left, swinging around the SUV to take the road the doctor just came from. Turner stares into his rearview mirror as Travis drives away behind him, then looks down at his cell phone. He types in a text reading, "Meet me at sundown," and hits send. The doctor puts the phone in his breast pocket, his full lips tight above his salt and pepper beard, and steps lightly on the gas, turning right at the intersection. Later, as the sky darkens, Dr. Turner stands on a hill far away from the Mitchell family compound. He gazes across at the big red farmhouse, open-air garage, and red barn, all nestled deep in the distant trees. He turns to his right as a caravan of vehicles pull up behind his SUV, their headlights glaring in the evening gloom. Turner looks back at the distant house, his jacket's collar turned up against the wind. Later, in the darkness of the night, two men dressed in black brush past tall weeds and stride toward the warm glow of the Mitchell farmhouse. Three others fall into step behind these men, and they all march toward the yellow light. At the side of the house, one of these masked men peers in the kitchen window. Mitchell is inside, pulling open the cabinet under the sink and taking out the red plastic medical case. He carries it out the side door and down the steps to the yard, grabbing a bottle of lighter fluid from the railing as he goes. Behind him, the masked man hides in the shadows near the open door. Mitchell places the case on top of the wood in the fire pit, then squirts lighter fluid down on it all. He sets the fluid down and pats the pockets of his jeans. Mitchell heads back into the house. In the kitchen, he pulls open a drawer and takes out a fireplace lighter. Back outside, he starts down the steps and freezes. The red plastic medical box is no longer in the fire pit. The old man looks to his right, then his left. In the house behind him, a figure watches, then slips past the open door. Mitchell heads back into the house as just to the left of the wooden landing he treads upon, the masked man cowers below, gripping the red plastic box. High above, the moon glows diffusely through bare tree branches as they sway gently in the night breeze. Inside, long shadows slice across the tiles of the kitchen floor. The masked man inside the house steps to the door, unlocking it. His fellow intruders stride into the house, passing by shadowy family photos propped up on the mantel. One of them crosses to the kitchen holding the red plastic case. He pulls open the cabinet under the sink, puts the case inside the leather bag, then removes the bag from the trash bin. In his room, Travis sleeps on his side, the tattoos on his shoulder and ribcage facing upward. Brad sleeps soundly also. Up in the master bedroom, the door slowly swings inward. The masked man from the kitchen slips into the room, carrying the black leather doctor's bag. He steps slowly around the foot of the hospital bed until he gets to the far side, then places the bag on the edge of the mattress. The old woman on the bed remains motionless as he opens the bag and reaches inside. He pulls out some long plastic tubing from the case, then steps around to the foot of the bed. The man turns and freezes in position. In the corner of the room, Mitchell sleeps on a rocking chair, the lap blanket covering his legs. The masked man dashes from the room. Mitchell stirs, putting a hand to his head. In another room, TJ and Ronnie sleep in twin beds. The masked man continues away from the master bedroom and steps down the staircase. He turns to see Mitchell standing at the top of the stairs. The old man lunges for him, slamming him into the wall. They grapple, then part of the handrail rips away and they tumble down the stairs. The masked man sits back on a windowsill, gripping his shoulder. Next to him, Mr. Mitchell lies in a crumpled heap at the foot of the staircase. Two of the other masked men stride into the area. The guy on the sill leans forward and feels the old man's neck for a pulse. Mitchell's open eyes stare up blankly. The masked man withdraws his hand from the carotid, then runs his fingers over his own forehead. TJ wakes up and looks at his brother's bed. Back at the foot of the stairs, one masked man carries away the broken handrail while the other two pick up Mitchell's lifeless body. TJ gets himself a glass of water at the kitchen sink, his distorted image reflected in reverse of the shiny black screen of the old-style television two rooms over. He trudges toward the TV with his glass, switching off the kitchen light. Now he sits on an armchair watching a program about wolves. He flips to a screen reading program listings, then clicks the remote again. Step by step, as the mill prospered, the farmers got more money, until they, like the miller and his helpers, could buy automobiles and radios and electric lights. TJ rubs his face, then rises and walks to the television cabinet. He squats down in front of the TV, his round face lit up brightly in the flickering glow. He pulls out an old VHS tape, then puts it back. Now he finds a decorative metal box, its lid tied closed with a lacy white ribbon. He slips the ribbon off and flips up the lid of the green and red box. TJ squints down into the box's contents, pulling out some newspaper clippings. He scans another clipping, his lips parted, then sets it back in the box. Below the clippings, he finds another VHS tape. The label on the cassette's side reads, Grace, New Life Church Video, May 28, 1982. He slides it into the player. On the warped, glitchy video, a framed painting of a stylized cross sits on a table next to a young, blonde-tressed Mrs. Mitchell.
Hello, and thank you for choosing to learn more about the New Life Church, where worship and devotion both to Christ and our fellow members serve as the foundation of our beliefs. At the New Life Church, we cherish the opportunity to serve the Lord as part of His flock. But we also consider ourselves shepherds in our own right, dutifully protecting one another from the wolves of the world who might wish to prey upon us. Our parishioners include lawyers and doctors and school teachers, young and old, all races and backgrounds, people from all walks of life. We're all the same in the eyes of God. Each of us is special, and so are you. So join me now for a more in-depth look at...
Grace, it's okay. Grace, what? Your nose is bleeding.
No, it's okay.
No, it's not okay. Look, your nose. This is... Look, and the bruise. Look, did he...
Bradley, just... It's okay.
Listen, look at me. Look at me. He can't keep it. Don't
worry. No, I'm sorry.
You've nothing to be sorry for.
TJ squints as his mother steps out of frame, wiping her bloody nose.
That's it. Turn the camera.
He stares at the snow filling the TV screen, then leans forward. He turns his head to the right. TJ rises up from his seat, the glass of water in his hand, and turns toward the other room. He walks through the opening into the dining room, his eyes darting around curiously. TJ sets his half-full water glass down near the edge of the dining room table. His shadow passes across the table as he nears the open door. He steps just outside the doorway onto the wooden landing and stares off toward the woods. Behind him, a masked man picks up the house phone, unplugs the cord, then twines it around a fist and yanks the other end from the wall. As TJ stares into the darkness, the masked man jumps him from behind. Now Ronnie steps out of his bedroom and heads down the stairs. A masked man stops to listen, his hood pulled down. Ronnie trots down the steps, then notices the missing handrail. He continues on, turning to gaze at the foot of the staircase. The masked man ducks into a bathroom. Ronnie picks up a shard of the broken rail, looks up at the stairs, then drops the piece back to the floor. The masked man stands in the tub and pulls the shower curtain closed, ripping a ring off. Outside, one of the men drags TJ deep into the woods, the half-conscious man's wrists bound in front of him with a telephone cord. They drop him on top of his dead father, his hands near the old man's pocket knife sheath. In the bathroom, Ronnie saunters over to the toilet and flips on the two tulip-shaped glass sconces hanging over the sink. He stands in front of the toilet bowl, then looks down to see the curtain ring lying next to his foot. He faces the closed curtain, staring where the ring ripped from the fabric. In the woods outside, the masked man leans down, struggling to move TJ again. TJ stabs him in the stomach, and he falls back. TJ rolls to his side, his hands still bound. Ronnie throws the shower curtain open. The tub stands empty. He closes his eyes briefly, then turns back to face the toilet, leaning one hand against the wall as he urinates. He rocks his head forward. He reaches for the toilet flush handle, touching it with a finger, then freezes. He swivels his head to the right, where across the room is a linen closet, its dark louvered doors closed. Ronnie's brow creases as he gazes at the door. He pushes down on the toilet handle. The man bursts out of the closet. They struggle, Ronnie chokeholding the man. Ronnie's feet are kicked out and his head slams into the side of the tub. The masked man drags himself off the other man's lifeless body. He looks down to see Ronnie splayed out in an awkward position in the tub, blood smeared across the white porcelain behind his bearded head. The man reaches above the body to the shower curtain. Brad wakes up from the noise. He looks over toward Melissa, then rises from his bed. Two masked men carry Ronnie's body, now wrapped in the shower curtain, down the basement stairs. They heft him beyond the narrow wooden door. Meanwhile, in the living room...
What's going on?
Shh. So I'm not sure.
In the basement, the men drag the body to a small room just off the breaker room, then one pulls the main breaker, and the house goes dark. In the darkness of the basement, they lug Ronnie's body farther into the side room, knocking over a box. Upstairs, the brothers flinch. Brad and Travis split up as the two in the basement drag Ronnie's corpse deeper into the shadows. Outside, TJ struggles to crawl across the ground, his hands still tied together. Nearby, two masked men run up to their stabbed comrade. One pulls the knife out.
Oh, God!
TJ watches the scene.
What do we do? What do we do?
Get him up! Peter, what do you think we do? What do we do?
Stop! Let me get him up!
Come on. They carry him away. The injured man's mask falls to the ground as they drag him off. In the basement, Brad opens the door to the breaker box room.
Jesus.
Sorry, sis.
Where are Ronnie and TJ?
What do you mean you don't know?
I don't fucking know. Not in the beds.
You think that they slashed the tires?
A masked man holds Ronnie's body just out of view. Up in the dining room, Melissa steps forward, lighting her way with Brad's cell phone.
Brad?
Downstairs, Travis strides to the breaker box. Melissa walks beside the dining room table. The lights come on, and she spins to see a masked figure. She knocks the glass.
Melissa!
Melissa steps on the glass. She drops the phone and tears out the door. The two brothers dash up the basement stairs. Melissa limps around the side of the house, but another masked figure stands on the front porch. One of the masked men extends a ladder and climbs up to the roof. Melissa lopes into the woods. The figure on the roof makes his way to the bedroom window, while inside, Travis shines his light on the open leather bag. Melissa runs deeper into the woods, then spins to a stop, crouching down behind a thick tree trunk. She leans back against the bark, her mouth open and her blonde hair tangled over her forehead. Then she reaches down to touch her bloody foot. Steadying her foot with her left hand, she stretches down with her right hand to pluck out a shard of glass. She bites her lips and throws her head back. Now she notices the injured man's mask lying on the ground a few feet away from her, covered with blood. She leans forward as dead leaves fall from the tree above her. She turns her head to the left, leaning out to peer around the side of the tree trunk. Someone bursts from the right and Melissa struggles with him. A masked man runs up to them, brandishing the pocket knife. He stabs the man on top of Melissa. He's killed TJ. In the dark living room, someone picks up the metal cigarette lighter bearing the initials RGM from the top of the TV cabinet. The brothers barricade the door with dining room furniture. They run upstairs. Rick crashes through the window above the barricaded furniture.
Get the truck.
Masked men storm into the house as upstairs, the brothers block the bedroom door. The men slam into the closed door. The intruders pull away from the door. One of them motions for the others to all head back down the stairs. In Travis's room, a masked figure slowly opens the door and gazes inside. Down in the basement, another masked man peers out of his hiding place under the stairs. The man in Travis's room walks to the desk and takes Travis's cell phone. The basement man looks up the wooden stairs toward the light from the open doorway. The one in Travis's room pockets the cell phone and walks out. In the breaker room, a hand opens the box and kills the lights. In the front hallway, a lone masked man turns his head to look around in the darkness, then a yellow glow flickers from outside as the mercy fire takes hold on the lawn. Outside, two men face the dark house, standing motionless behind the flaming letters as the curtains of the bedroom window part. Travis steals over to hide next to a tree. As a masked figure walks away, Travis sprints to the garage. The old woman, Grace, lies still on the hospital bed, her eyes closed. Brad and Melissa stand near the windows.
I'm sure he's fine.
The light from the fire outside streams through the lace curtains as Brad twists and turns his hands together.
You don't trust him either.
He rubs one palm against the other.
I want to.
Downstairs in the living room, a masked man looks at the newspaper clippings in the metal box by the TV.
What kind of family is this?
The man lights the lighter to scan articles entitled, Local Man's Death Ruled an Accident, and Father of Two Found Dead, and Church Group Questioned in Man's Death.
I told you about my father.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think his death was an accident. I think it was my mother's church. He wouldn't stop hitting her. So they made him stop.
Is that who you think these people are?
The man burns the articles.
I'm sure of it.
Melissa's eyes widen as Brad steps away, and she takes a deep breath. Just outside her window, the man on the roof crouches and leans to peek in. Melissa turns to look out.
There's Travis.
Travis straddles the motorcycle, looking up to see the man kick in his mother's window. masked men by the fire chase him as he drives away. Another man dives on him from the side, knocking him to the ground and sending the pistol flying. Meanwhile, the man on the roof flees back out the window. Travis crawls toward the distant pistol, but is grabbed from behind. Travis struggles with the man, who drops the pocket knife. Travis grabs the knife. He jumps on the man and presses the blade downward as the guy below him fights to keep it away. The man who tackled the motorcycle rises, rips off his mask, and rushes forward, fumbling for the gun among the leaves. Travis strains to stab the man under him as he resists. The maskless man points the gun. Brad looks out the window.
No! No! No!
The balding maskless man drops the gun, his middle-aged face contorted.
Oh, my God! Oh, God! Oh, God!
Brad grimaces and squirms.
Okay.
One of the masked men embraces the balding man. In the bedroom, Brad knocks over a dresser and swings the axe down on it. Grace stirs slightly as he chops it to pieces. Down in the kitchen, a masked man runs his injured hand under the kitchen tap, cleaning the blood off. One of his comrades steps over to the sink with a roll of gauze. Brad uses the toolbox hammer to board up the window with pieces of the shattered dresser. The man with gauze wraps the injured hand just above a wrist tattoo depicting the stylized cross. The one who dressed the wound sits heavily into a kitchen chair. His injured friend sits across the table from him. The one on the roof leans back into the building, his bruised, unmasked head resting against the uneven red shingles. The masked man who dressed the wound strides from the kitchen to the living room, where others wait. He pulls up his mask. It's Dr. Turner. Two men sit on the couch, and the bald one sits in the armchair, his head bowed.
I know it might seem like what we're doing is wrong, but it's not.
I didn't think it would come to this.
They gave us no choice, Hank.
I can't do this anymore.
Hank stands up.
It's okay.
The doctor gazes into Hank's glistening eyes.
I'm sorry.
Hank!
The balding man trudges down the hallway toward the door.
What about the girl? She's innocent.
Not after all she's seen.
We can't lose sight of what's going on here. We can't give up on Grace. Look, I didn't want this either. I was hoping we'd get in and get out without anybody getting hurt, especially not one of us. But that...
Turner's lips tremble.
That's not what happened.
He gazes at the other men.
If anyone else wants to go, I understand.
One of the men on the couch squeezes his hands together, then turns to the person next to him. Another man gazes off into the distance through the ragged eye holes of his pale mask. Now, the dawn sun peeks up over the cloud-filled horizon, painting the sky with streaks of pink. The morning light glows through the trees beside the Mitchell farmhouse. In the master bedroom, the medical monitor continues to glow and flash. Grace's hand twitches slightly as beyond her, Brad and Melissa sit on the floor with their backs to her, leaning on the foot of her hospital bed.
Let's just forget about the money.
Brad stares at his hands.
I don't want to. And they're not going to stop me from getting it.
He looks off to the side, his jaw set. Brad stands up, wielding the axe in one hand.
No, Brad. No.
Melissa gazes at him pleadingly. He looks her over, his eyes unblinking. Now he eases the bedroom door open, stepping out into the hallway with the axe raised. He gazes down the hall, then looks to the staircase at his right. He starts down the stairs, his eyes wide. Melissa steps out and stands behind him at the top of the stairs. Brad turns to look at her. Together, they step into the downstairs hallway, Brad leading the way. He glances in the open doorway to their left, then continues on toward the dining room. They slow down as they get closer, and Melissa puts a hand out to touch the wall. They both freeze, staring forward. In the dining room, one of the intruders stands facing them holding the pocket knife, its blade smeared with blood. Another masked man turns to face them, a trowel in his grip. Brad rocks from one foot to the other.
Come on! Come on!
Another masked man rotates into view in the doorway before them. Another one steps in from the left. Three others step forward, one of them wearing a mask stained with blood. The men turn, spying the cell phone Melissa dropped on the dining room floor. Its 7:15 alarm fills the screen. Brad spins.
Come on!
They tear past masked faces peering in from outside and dash up the stairs. Melissa falls and the masked figures grab her legs. Brad pulls on her arm, trying to yank her free of the swarm of masked men pulling her downward. He lets her go, fleeing up to his mother's room. He wedges the door shut with a chair again as the crowd of men storm up after him. Brad backs away as they slam into the door, shaking the chair wildly.
Okay! I'm gonna do it!
He snatches up the black leather bag, setting it on the bed and fumbling inside it. Brad pulls out the metal device and opens up the red plastic case to find two vials of liquid inside. He attaches the vials to ports on the device and runs a rubber tube from it to his mother's IV. He flips switches on the metal device labeled Start Flow.
I'm doing it! Okay?
The chair flies from the door. Brad stares at the doorknob of the still-closed door, then touches an on-off dial on the metal device. He looks up at his mother's lined face, then twists the dial. The vials empty into the machine, and their liquid streams through clear plastic tubes into Grace's arm. Her lips tremble, then she is still. Brad gazes over at his mom, his eyes reflecting the morning light streaming in between the wood slats boarding up the windows. Grace's face is motionless, her eyes closed. Brad turns away from her. The open pamphlet beside him reads, "Approved for experimental use under the Medically Ethical Recovery Care, Mercy. Act for seriously ill patients."
It's done! All right! Do you hear me? It's done! She's alive!
Grace opens her eyes.
All right, you got what you wanted! I gave her the cure! answer me, goddammit! She's alive!
There is no one on the staircase. Grace blinks and moves her hand, which has the same inner wrist tattoo featuring the stylized cross of the New Life Church. The door swings slowly open, and Brad and his mother watch the church members file into the room one by one. They form a line at the foot of the bed, no longer wearing any masks. Grace blinks up at them from the bed. Dr. Turner gazes over at her from the group of men, his mouth forming a slight smile. Grace meets his eyes, and a tear rolls down the front of his cheek. Outside, fluffy white clouds drift over the yellow glow of the sun. Brad leans his mouth against his clasped hands as he sits on the steps of the front porch. Across from him, four men carry his mother out of the house on a stretcher. Grace turns to look over at her son, her eyes hard. She turns away from him, and the men carry her off. Brad watches her go. Dr. Turner walks up behind Brad on the porch, standing just to the side of the seated man. Brad looks back at the doctor as Turner pulls the pistol out of his pocket. Their eyes lock. A view on a thick, dark woods. Birds scatter from a bare tree. Below an ashen sky filled with storm clouds, bleak farmland stretches across the horizon. A two-lane country road splits the landscape in a straight line, no cars traveling on its gray surface. Next to the road, a meadow of goldenrod sways in the breeze. Fade to black. persons and events in this motion picture are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons or events is unintentional. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Copyright 2016, Out the Window Productions, LLC. Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.